Welcome to Sound Off with Lewis Woodard.
How can you not know who Lewis is? Oh my God, you hear his voice, you recognize who he is.
Wrapping up the day in sports in a fast-paced, high-energy atmosphere. You got an opinion? Bring it strong or don't bring it at all.
I can say anything I want. That's the beauty of this country.
Dial 843-652-3776 or Sound Off on Twitter at 1003TheTeam.
This is a special person.
Now, your host, Lewis Woodard.
What a weekend for regional teams. The Gamecocks on their bye week, so they don't pick up an L, but in the process, Clemson just absolutely lays the wood on Miami, worst loss in school history, fires their coach, and moves up to 3 in the AP poll. Coastal Carolina Chanticleers have a bit of a scare, but they went on the road at Monmouth to preserve an undefeated record, 7-0. Running back D'Angelo Henderson breaks the FCS record for 21 consecutive games with a touchdown. That's consistency, folks. And they maintain their number one and number two rankings in the polls, which I'm not quite so sure I'm down with them being ranked that high, but it's good to be undefeated. And the Carolina Panthers last night, speaking of staying undefeated, 6-0. And the score does not indicate how well they played. The Panthers, if it were not for a couple of turnovers, would have hit the Eagles' jugular early in the game. They were bigger, meaner, nastier, and Chris Collinsworth couldn't have used the term old school any more times than he did last night, and it was appropriate. 843-652-3776 is the number. A big-time weekend for schools in the Carolinas in football. And we're going to get started with the Carolina Panthers here, and just broadly, this team is for real, in my opinion, and I'm just curious if you guys think that they are an upper tier, upper echelon NFL team, a team that is one of the four or five teams that can win the Super Bowl, because we know that they have one of the four or five best records, because there are only five teams right now that are 6-0, and Carolina is one of them. But before beating the Eagles and before beating the Seahawks, who, it should be noted, both have losing records. But before beating those two teams, you could easily look at the Panthers and dismiss them and say, oh, well, you know, they took their tour through the AFC South and, you know, they beat up on Jacksonville and they beat up on Houston. They beat up on Jacksonville and New Orleans, who are also in that bad division with them. Let me know when they play somebody. And coming off the bye week, we know they're in the stretch where they play Seattle, they play Philadelphia, win-win. And now they've got the Colts, which is a very interesting game because a lot of people think Andrew Luck dodged the Panthers by going back to Stanford. And then they've got the Green Bay Packers at home, and wouldn't that be awesome if both teams were 7-0? Wouldn't that be incredible? But here's this for perception. The Carolina Panthers supposedly haven't played anybody good yet. They're just beating up on bad teams. This is the six undefeated teams in the NFL right now in their opposition records. The opposing records of the New England Patriots, 18-22. The Carolina Panthers, 15-26. Cincinnati and Green Bay, 14-26. And Denver, 13-26. So the Panthers have not been beating up on bad teams as much as Cincinnati, Green Bay, and Denver if you're going by one loss record. Now, everything is subjective at this stage of the game because if you play Houston, you're just going to get a W, right? So, man, they're bad. They are really bad. Apparently don't have hard knocks. That's not a great idea. But back to the Panthers. I mean, do you guys think that they are legit? I mean, do you think they're in that conversation amongst the four or five teams that are capable of winning the Super Bowl and deserving of being in that class of teams that are undefeated right now? Because each successive week, like last night was just a statement to me. It went beyond the score. And I am 100% a believer now that they could go on a run and win the Super Bowl. I mean, that was a team last night that I saw that could go into Lambeau Field. I mean, when the weather gets nasty out, they've got excellent line play on both sides of the football. They've got a power running game. And if they could just get some semblance of a pulse in the passing game, I think that would take them over the top. And what kills me is they don't have Kelvin Benjamin right now. Had 1,000 yards receiving as a rookie, teamed up with Cam Newton. If he were here as a second-year player, I would say, man, write the Packers and the Panthers in for the NFC Championship game, whatever happens, and that game happens. I'm not saying are they going to win the Super Bowl, because anything can happen in a given playoffs. Like, you can have a team thoroughly beat, and Eli Manning can hit Mario Manningham on a sideline 50-yard prayer throw that's just thrown into a basket, just perfect throw. And you can lose because of that. You can lose because David Tyree catches a football against his helmet. So anything can happen in the NFL playoffs. Anything can happen in March Madness because you're dealing in a one-game sample size, right? Anything can happen in college football because over one game, crazy stuff can happen. But there's probably a group of four or five teams that are capable of winning the Super Bowl. Every once in a while, someone comes out of nowhere, like Eli getting hot or Flacco getting hot and carrying teams that weren't necessarily tremendous the entire year. But I really do think the Panthers are in that class. And it was really cool not only that they're doing it, but they've got two Coastal Carolina players on their team that had huge moments last night. Josh Norman, how about this? Gave up one completion for 3 yards last night and totally prevented a touchdown at the end of the first half.
Big draw play. Bradford to throw. End zone. Knocked away. Incomplete. The intended receiver right corner of the end zone. Zach Ertz.
And Josh Norman takes Zach Ertz up the football field. It's a swing pass. He recognizes it, and then he gets a big paw, a left hand out there, and knocks the ball away. Good job and recognition by Josh Norman on that play.
So you had Ben Wickery and then Norman helping to prevent touchdowns here before the end of the half. You know it. Two good plays.
That was just incredible, the way he laid out for that football and knocked it away. And that was basically the only time they challenged him all night. Bradford wanted nothing to do with Josh Norman. Absolutely nothing to do with him.
We talked about that at the beginning of the season. Once he starts playing at this high of a level, people are going to stop throwing at him. I didn't expect it to be a few weeks from when we talked about it. I thought maybe next year at the end of the season, but obviously people are starting to respect his game.
It's remarkable. I thought that he was going to ascend to the level where people thought he was a top 10 corner, and now they're saying top 5. Pro Football Focus is ranking him number 1 right now. That's based on data, hard data, not people's opinions. I think Panthers fans are freaking out last night because Skip Bayless tweeted that he's the new Richard Sherman. Everybody said, please, Bayless, stop paying attention to the Panthers. They're not good. Don't pay attention.
He almost had an interception in the first half. I think he's like lined up real close to the line of scrimmage and was like a dump off, and he almost picked that one off too, and he hadn't put his hands in his head. I can't remember exactly where in the first half it happened, but I was like, oh my gosh, he is just all over the ball.
They're such a complete football team if they just had one sure-handed receiver. Just one. Just one sure-handed receiver that didn't run a 5.5 40 like Jericho Cotchery. Like, if you could give me Philly Brown's legs with Jericho Cotchery, I would show you a Pro Bowler.
Ted Ginn has been stepping his game up, though. He's been playing
quite
well.
Yeah, well, the Panthers could have been up 14-0 early in the first quarter had Ted Ginn not had the ball stripped on the 5-yard line. So two of Cam's three picks last night were off of receivers' hands. He put Funchess in a bad position with some high heat, and Ginn got the ball stripped right out of his hands. But this is really tough for me to figure out when I'm watching Cam Newton, because at some point you say, okay, maybe in his fifth year in the NFL, he should learn how to have a little bit of touch on some of these passes and not throw 90 miles an hour like 3 feet above somebody's head. So when they get their hands on it, it just puts it up like a pop-up on a baseball diamond. And a defensive back like Byron Maxwell can just run underneath it and catch it like he did. Well, I can't fault the Ginn one against him at all.
That's the one that got reviewed for a while, and it was kind of, I don't understand how that really wasn't a catch. I mean, I don't want to get in a huge argument about if he was down or not.
The NFL has an absolute nightmare with its replay system, and you saw that in the second half with the Luke Kuechly pass interference play, because there are certain calls that are reviewable and not reviewable, and certain ones that can be reversed and not reversed. So you can get the play wrong by overturning one aspect of it. Like, Luke Kuechly should not have been called for pass interference because the ball wasn't catchable. But they didn't rule that it wasn't catchable in the field. They ruled that it was tipped. So when they pulled back the fact that it was tipped, it then became PI. And you can't go back in a review and call something pass interference that wasn't, because pass interference isn't reviewable.
Challenge.
Yeah, I mean, it was meta. It was like, you know, it was like watching Inception, a dream within a dream within a dream. Somehow Chip Kelly knew exactly what was going on, but it was funny watching Twitter and the rest of America try to figure out what was reviewable and what wasn't. It seems like this happens, but I'm glad replay exists, but that's an instance where the official should be able to look at the play in its totality and say, I get that this isn't supposed to be reviewable or reversible or challengeable, but okay, so he missed it. It wasn't a tipped pass. Bradford's arm was hit. It still wasn't catchable. The essence of it was Luke Kuechly understood that the play wasn't catchable and just mauled that receiver because he was allowed to. And then because they went back in time and said it wasn't tipped, it then became pass interference. I don't know. It was a nightmare to figure that out. But in the entire evening, the only thing that I walked away from, and I was like, man, if the Panthers could just have a sure-handed possession receiver, if they could just have an Anquan Boldin in a big spot just to be able to put some mittens on the football when Cam throws it that hard. Because Olsen is coverable. Like, he's excellent. Outside of Rob Gronkowski, I don't know what tight end in the NFL I would want over him. But teams are just smothering him right now. And who is Cam going to? Ted Ginn, Philly Brown, Jericho Cotchery. He's trying to make a receiver out of Funchess. I was struggling with this last night, too, when I was watching the game. And I was just thinking, man, Funchess isn't a second-round pick. What the heck, Gettleman? What the heck? And then again, Kawan Short's having, like, the best two-game run of a defensive tackle in recent memory with, like, 5 sacks, I think. So he did all right on that second-round pick. But on Funchess, I just don't see the guy making plays at all. Like, he can't – catching a football is fairly important for a wide receiver. And I just – it's not like – I just get frustrated watching that guy play. And I think, well, you know, it was just 2 years ago that Josh Norman got benched for blowing a coverage against Stevie Johnson and giving the Bills a win on the last play of the game. And it wasn't until about a year ago that we found out he could still be a great NFL player. So you never want to rule somebody out in their rookie season, but there is kind of an expectation when you use a pick that high, like a one or a two, you kind of expect them to be able to contribute. It's like, okay, this guy's big. He's not slow. Cam's got to be able to find him, right?
It just stings a little bit more that Benjamin's out and you're in dire need of a receiver, so it's putting a bigger spotlight on Funchess to step up in his rookie season.
Other than that, man, they're finding a pass rush. They didn't have a pass rush 2 or 3 weeks ago. Kawan Short's playing outstanding. Jared Allen picked up 2 sacks last night. I mean, I walked away thinking that they are, because it's the NFL. You can't have a complete team. There's something called the salary cap. The only way you can have a complete team is if you hit a home run and have guys on rookie contracts. Like the Seahawks 2 years ago when they had Richard Sherman and Russell Wilson on rookie contracts, and they were able to have a bunch of pieces around them because they were getting essentially a $12 million player and a $20 million player on the books for like $1 million. So it's like, oh, they've got an extra 31 toward their cap because they got those guys on rookie deals. That's the way you build a complete team. And the Panthers have some good production on rookie deals right now, but at some point in time, you're just not going to be elite at everything. And you check all their boxes and it's like, what don't they have? I mean, their offensive line is playing really good right now, and that's something I was worried about heading into the season. I mean, I didn't expect them to be 6-0, and I've just been really, really impressed. And I will say, Brian, you and I were going through our over-unders for Cam Newton, which one of us is going to make our donation to the Cam Newton Foundation. And that was bad news for me yesterday. If they're using Tolbert and Jonathan Stewart to great effect in short yardage situations, Cam only ran 4 times for 20 yards yesterday. I thought when the going got tough in some of these grinded out games against better competition, they would be more reliant on the Cam Newton run. It seems like they're transitioning away from that.
I did hear an interesting stat this morning listening to SportsCenter about Cam Newton and his running ability on third downs. It said since he's been in the league on third down, he's ran for 110 first downs, and the next closest person was below 60. So he's doing a lot to extend the drives and make something happened for that offense, regardless if it's in the red zone or not.
Yeah, well, that's a huge thing. If you have a 7-point lead and there's 8 minutes to go in the game and it's 3rd and 9 on your own 20 because you've gotten 1 yard on 2 plays and Cam Newton, everything's covered downfield and he's able to pick up that first down with his legs, I mean, just keep the chains moving. I mean, Gamecock fans listening know how useful that was when Connor Shaw was able to do that for, you know, his entire career. That's something that they haven't been able to put together in a competent run-pass combination. Nunez hasn't been able, because he's so young, to master the offense and have a throwing threat. And Dylan Thompson and Perry Orth haven't been able to run. I mean, when you have somebody that can do both, it just makes things that much more difficult. And the Panthers have the goods to possess the football for a long time. when they're that good at running in short yardage. And Jonathan Stewart looked like what they spent a first-round draft pick on him to do years and years and years ago. And I do think there was something to be said. You like to rotate your running backs because you don't want someone to just, like Larry Johnson with the Chiefs that one year that got like 8,000 carries and he wasn't good after that. You don't want to totally throw somebody under the bus. But I think there is something to be said about getting into a rhythm and getting a certain amount of carries as well. And without D'Angelo Williams, Jonathan Stewart seems like he can actually work his way into a game. And who wants to deal with the way that he runs in the fourth quarter? Nobody. And another thing that I'm just kind of touching on right now, 843-652-3776, are the Panthers for real? Are they one of the four or five teams that can win the Super Bowl, or have they just had an easy schedule? That's kind of the essence of what I'm trying to get to. And they've won me over the past 2 weeks. Even as a fan, I tend to be the skeptical fan guy more than the rah-rah fan guy, and they've completely won me over. And at different points over the last 3 years, I have thought that both Ron Rivera and Mike Shula, his offensive coordinator, did not have it. At different points, I have abandoned ship on both of those guys and thought that they didn't have what it took to operate their position at the NFL level. And I have been wrong. I mean, people need opportunities to evolve, and I have to give Jerry Richardson and Dave Gettleman all the credit in the world for allowing those guys to grow in their roles and make adjustments. And I think in the first 2 years that Rivera was coaching the Panthers, with Rob Chudzinski as the offensive coordinator, they were running a lot of gadget plays. They were doing a lot of really cute things on offense, and they didn't necessarily have an identity. And now you look at them, and they just run the football, and they stop the run. They're powerful. When you play the Panthers, you are going to have a bunch of bruises. And that's their identity. And there aren't a ton of teams out there that you can assess their identity as easily as you can the Panthers. And Mike Shula, I mean, up until, I want to say, 8 weeks ago in Charlotte, the guy was a pariah. I mean, you couldn't find somebody that had a lower approval rating in the town of Charlotte than offensive coordinator Mike Shula. And I see the complexity of some of the things that they do in the run game and the fact that, I mean, for lack of a better term, he's been given lemons and he's made lemonade. I mean, what's his personnel? Decent interior run blockers, heavy runners, hard runners like Tolbert, Stewart, and Cam. And because of their cap issues and because of Kelvin Benjamin, they don't have great wide receivers. And they're basically playing outstanding smash-mouth football. It looks different. And it involves a lot of creativity. And I got to give Shula a lot of credit for that. 843-652-3776. Big Paulie is up first on Sound Off. What do you got for us, man?
Hey, Lewis. I just wanted to say the only reason I'm not buying in completely to the Panthers is the fact that you brought up they got no wideouts. I mean, Ted Ginn Jr. is your number one wideout. That is going to work. I'm this pass happy league. You know, it's going to come, you know, bite him in the butt. Now, I think if it wasn't for Tom Brady, Cam Newton would be a big candidate for MVP. Because what he's done with the team and the way he's carried it, okay, is worthy of MVP consideration. And one other point I just wanted to bring up real quick and see what you and your listeners have to say about it is when Cam came out of college, we talked about this, about the Ed Hockley thing a number of weeks ago, and, you know, he didn't really get some respect there, is when he came out of college, they asked him about, you know, the quotes among the so-called writers and things like that was, well, could he be the next Jamarcus Russell? And I was just wondering if, and maybe you could tell me, or one of your listeners could tell me, who was the last white quarterback who got compared to Ryan Leaf or Heath Shuler? And I'm just going to hang up with that and see what you guys have to say.
Yeah, Big Paulie, you touched on something that has been discussed at length. It's uncomfortable. It's a race topic. And it is interesting how certain guys get the benefit of the doubt and certain others don't. No one looked at RG3 and said this guy could be the next Jamarcus Russell. There is something about Cam being big and having a big arm, and maybe the interview with John Gruden before the draft where he looked clueless about X's and O's on the whiteboard. Maybe people thought that those things were Jamarcus Russell-like, but there's no doubt whatsoever that that was a very, very unfair comparison. And as people evolve mentally and we see more and more black quarterbacks, you're not getting crazy comparisons like that anymore. But that the comparisons to Jamarcus Russell were, in my opinion, out of bounds and racially charged to a certain extent. And it is funny. I mean, you don't hear guys the only racism that you're racism is a very strong word, but the only racial thing that you hear going against a white quarterback is when you hear someone say, like, hey, Andrew Luck is sneaky athletic. No, Andrew Luck is just a raw athlete. Dude ran a 4.640 in the combine, which for like a 6'3", 250-pound guy, I mean, he could be an NFL linebacker with his athleticism. And so I think sometimes with a white football player, you hear the sneaky athletic or surprisingly athletic, but that pales in comparison to some of the things that the black quarterbacks have to deal with. And I do agree with you, Paulie, that Cam Newton is very important to the Carolina Panthers. And if you're taking his MVP candidacy seriously, you have to look beyond the statistics, because he is not set up to have a great statistical year with Ted Ginn and Corey Brown and the rest of that receiving core. 843-652-3776 is the number. Terry is up next. What do you got for us, Terry?
I think the Panthers are a for real team. I mean, I think they need either a punt returner or a kickoff returner, because Ted Ginn, fair catches everything, and maybe he's been told that because they don't want to get him messed up.
Yeah, Terry, I noticed that last night. There were a couple of plays where he had room to take off, and you're used to seeing guys not put their hands up in the air and getting blasted and saying, man, he should have taken a fair catch. There were a couple of times last night where I thought Ted Ginn had some space.
Yeah, I think the Panthers are good this year, not because of who is on the team, but who isn't on the team. A guy named Greg Hardy, I mean, I don't think they miss him very much.
Yeah, we're gonna get into him next segment, actually, Terry.
All right, that's all I got. Thanks.
But, Greg Hardy. I've got some strong feelings on that and how the Cowboys have handled it. So, spoiler alert, that's coming up soon. But last call here before we hit a break. JC is on the line. What's up, JC?
Hey, Lewis, how you doing?
Doing well, man. What's good?
Listen, I completely agree with you. I think the Panthers are an absolute, contender for the Super Bowl. And the reason is one, ball control. Their time of possession, they have the ability to dominate time of possession in a football game. And, you know, when you're talking about playing, the Packers or the Patriots, ball control is essential because you want to keep Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady off the field. Panthers defense played phenomenal, even with injuries. I really, there are concerns at the wide receiver spot, but, you know, if the Panthers can run the football the way they've been running the football, and if Cam Newton can continue to make clutch plays, even though his stats aren't necessarily, eye-opening, I think that the Panthers are a Super Bowl contender. And I'm not really a big NFL guy. I feel like watching them, they certainly have the ability to get there. And the fact of the matter is the guys on this team have been there. They've been to the playoffs. You know, they know kind of what to expect. I really honestly think if everything continues in the manner that it has been so far this season, they're not going to get beat bad by anybody. And so as long as you stay in the game, you got a chance to win it. So that's where I'm at. Let you guys talk about that. Thanks.
Yeah, JC, some excellent points. I'm going to get into a little bit more of my thoughts on the Carolina Panthers in possessing the football next segment. We're also going to get into Greg Hardy. That's coming up next in Sound Off.
Now, back to Sound Off, taking your calls like we posed to be.
Following up on the points that JC was making about the Panthers being able to possess the football and Big Paulie's concern that the Panthers don't have a big play wide receiver, I don't think they're mutually exclusive. Someone is going to have to step up and be a down-the-field vertical threat, and someone's going to have to step up besides Greg Olsen to be able to catch some of those Cam Newton high-heat kind of passes if they are going to be a Super Bowl-caliber team. I feel like they are one player away, sort of. But at the same time, in these one-game settings, if the weather is really messed up and you've got their power running game, if you're in a one-game situation, what if Cam has a postseason like Flacco had? 3 years ago. I mean, anything is possible when the rest of your team is that good. Your quarterback can get hot, a receiver can come out of nowhere. That is the one facet of the game I think they have to step up. But the Panthers, I say this all the time in sports, that I enjoy not only the drama, but I enjoy a good variety. Like when I look at coaches, I love Brad Stevens in his quiet demeanor, his humbleness, the head coach of the Celtics who used to be the Butler head coach in basketball, just exudes calmness and confidence. But I'm also thoroughly entertained by the likes of Rex Ryan, which is kind of the opposite, right? I like them for the balance that they create by having a variety of personalities in sport. And the Panthers are going opposite the trend in how to play football and offense right now. And there is something beautiful about the fact that they are offering something that isn't offered very much in the NFL with some of the things they're doing in the running game and their constant usage of heavy personnel. And it's almost like watching Stanford play college football right now. And it's like I was watching Stanford on Saturday night, and they rolled out a diamond formation in the backfield with two tight ends. So if you're doing the math, they had zero wide receivers on a play. Like, legitimately, those guys roll out heavy people in tight spaces and just clash. And that's what the Panthers have the ability to do. And I think that so many teams are getting wide open, pass happy with their offenses. There is something smart that the Panthers are doing in that they are specializing in something that other people don't do. And when you have to see that, when you have to play the Panthers, which look like an offense from 1995, I mean, they look like, you know, I'm playing Madden on Nintendo 64 with the plays that they're drawing up. I think that there is something different about that. There is a curve, there's an off-speed pitch kind of element to what the Panthers are doing. And I just wish, like, I think that if they were one sure-handed veteran wide receiver right now, just one, not even a rock star, just a guy that you could rely on, like a good, strong possession receiver, the Mohsin Muhammad from the mid-2000s or an Anquan Boldin type, I think if they had one guy like that with their offense as it's currently constructed, I think that they would absolutely be a team the Packers would be afraid of, and a team that could go to a Super Bowl. And I think that when you talk about potential matchups with Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers down the road, those are the guys you're going to have to beat to win a Super Bowl. I don't think that there's a way that you can dodge both of those teams and win a Super Bowl. The Packers getting upset before the Panthers see them in the NFC Championship game, and then Tom Brady not being there in the Super Bowl, I don't think both of those things happen. But when you go up against prolific offenses like the Packers and the Patriots have, keeping the football away from them is a very important tactic, right? I mean, we've seen Stanford beat Oregon that way. That's the ultimate clash in style in college football. The team that's wide open with a bunch of fast little people and the team that just specializes in playing old school smash mouth football. Sometimes they don't even have wide receivers. Sometimes they have one.
I'm 100% with you and JC. I think they're posed to be one of the better teams in the NFL. The Packers and the Patriots present the biggest challenge just because of what they can do offensively. But like you both said, running the ball is the solution.
Those are more comfortable, more safe picks. Like even personally, if you ask me to bet on who's going to win the Super Bowl, and just looking at teams that have no losses, just entertaining the teams that are 6-0 right now, taking a look at those five teams, it's easy to say, okay, Brady and Rodgers, right? Peyton Manning has been so awful this year that you can throw him out of the elite quarterback narrative.
Yeah.
Because their passing game, even with Demaryius Thomas, is more anemic than the Panthers because he's just not going to be able to push the ball down the field at all.
And then you go to Cincinnati, but
yeah,
and they've had playoff troubles for years. They've looked great in the regular season for the last few years, and then they just suck in the playoffs.
I got to think that Andy Dalton's going to finally have a good game in a big spot. That guy can't.
But that's what everyone said about Tony Romo for 10 years.
He can't go to the playoffs every single year and bomb every game he's in. I would be afraid of Cincinnati right now, too. But it's just safer to go with Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers because they've done it before. Tom Brady's done it.
But to the Panthers' credit, I can only really speak towards the Packers because I watch their games every week, but they struggle with a running quarterback. I mean, you saw what Colin Kaepernick did to them 2 years ago in the playoff. He almost ran for 200 yards, and the rest of the team ran for probably like 300.
That's the thing. I think we saw with the Panthers last night, I'm not sure that they're willing to cut Cam loose like that. They gave him a $103 million contract.
But if it's the playoffs, they'll do anything to win.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think so, that maybe there's this hidden element to their offense that you get in the NFC Championship game or the Super Bowl and you can run Cam Newton 15 times because, you know, at that stage of the game, who cares about his career? I mean, if you get one Super Bowl, I mean, I would hate to lose his career in the place of winning a Super Bowl, but, you know, the guy might take that trade-off.
And they're running him more effectively, I think. It's not that they're running him less. It was it like a long third down? They ran the, like, the pretty much quarterback draw play with the power run up the middle, and he just bulldozed like a linebacker and a DB and got the first down. And then you saw the run on the goal line where he puts the ball in one hand, and I don't know how the heck he hung on to that. Like, he had two dudes hitting him, and he still hung on to the ball. So, obviously, he's still running it, but I don't think he's just taking off and being nervous in the pocket like he used to be.
Yeah, no, he definitely has better patience looking down the field, and he's not a one-read or run quarterback. That style that can get you very far in college football, looking for your top read if you don't have that okay scramble. The Johnny Manziel way of playing football, if you will. That's not what Cam's doing right now. It does make me wonder if he is going to run the football more when the games get tough, and I thought that he would. And they run him a lot earlier this season, but last night they didn't run very much. And, that was not a comfortable win. They were that one play away from hitting the jugular the entire game. And because of turnovers, they weren't quite able to do it. But back to what Big Paulie's saying and back to what JC's saying, yeah, they could really use one more sure-handed receiver. And I do think their ability to possess the football and play a different brand of football, a different style of football, I think can be worked to their advantage, because you definitely don't want Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers on the field, right? If you play them, your defense plays incredible, makes really big-time plays, and you're winning by a point with 8 minutes left, could you conceivably keep the football that entire time? Yes, and that's something that very few teams can do.
And I think another matchup thing that favors the Panthers is they have two of the best inside linebackers in the league right now, and that matches up well when you have Gronk going against you in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Josh Norman is getting hype right now for being the best DB in the league right now, like the best corner, at least the best cover corner in the league. Some people are saying Josh Norman. Collinsworth was starting to say Kawan Short's the best inside. I mean, listen, he's a defensive tackle, and he had 5 sacks in 2 games. A defensive tackle that has 5 sacks in a season is considered very good. And he made some decent plays in the run, too. And they've got Keekly, and they've got Davis. I mean, that defense is nasty. That is just absolutely nasty. And so it makes sense to pair it with an offense that focuses on possession and running hard. Put them in position to be rested and make plays. 843-652-3776. If you're a believer in the Panthers, or if you're not a believer, we're interested in hearing your thoughts. Are they one of the 4 or 5 teams that could potentially make the Super Bowl? Now, Greg Hardy, I was watching football last night in my living room. My roommate, I'm heating up chicken and potatoes, and my roommate looks over at me and says, "Hey, did you see Greg Hardy and Dez Bryant fight?" And I said, "Well, there doesn't seem like anything less inevitable than Greg Hardy and Dez Bryant getting in some kind of altercation at some point in the season. Of course, two like highly competitive, emotional guys like that would scrap at some point. But what I didn't expect to see later on was that Hardy actually forced his way into the special teams huddle and absolutely pushed special teams coordinator and assistant head coach Rich Bisaglia, I believe is his name. I got to look up his name again. Bisaglia, I know, is his last name, I believe. Bisaccia? Man, why does he have a difficult last name? Anyways, this is a guy that wants a South Carolina job. Host should know his name. Maybe that's me just not taking him seriously as a candidate. But I was stunned that Hardy actually hit a coach, because Greg Hardy has been begging us, absolutely begging us, and William, we're going to get to your call here in a second, begging us to know where the line between not giving an elite player another chance. He has really, really been walking that fine line. I'm going to get to my thought on that in a second, but William is next. What do you got for us, William?
Well, huge Carolina Panther fan, so I wanted to sound off for a second.
For sure.
I think we can make it to the next level. I think we've got Short and a great defense, just like you said. I think Cam, to make it a Myrtle Beach golf analogy, needs to learn actually how to hit a driver and how to hit a wedge, because I think he only has one speed when he's really throwing the ball to those receivers. And if he throws it a little high, they're not going to get a chance, being, you know, inexperienced as they are. So he needs to learn how to loft that ball in there when they're wide open. And I saw a couple passes yesterday where there were a couple people wide open and he threw it way too hard. So I just wanted to see what you thought about that.
Yeah, William, excellent points. I said this in the first segment of the show too, and I struggle with this so much. Like, when Cam Newton throws a pass, you know, a 15-yard pass, and it looks like the equivalent of a 95-mile-an-hour fastball. Footballs don't travel that fast, but it looks that fast on TV, and it hits a wide receiver in the hands, and you're saying, okay, should that guy have been able to make that play because Cam hit him right in the hands, or is that way too hard and way too high? And it just does make you wonder, 5 years into being an NFL quarterback, how much improvement Cam can make as a pure passer and put a little more touch on those footballs. And you saw that with the throw to Funchess yesterday. I mean, yes, could 10 or 15 receivers in the NFL have been able to make that play that Funchess didn't make? Of course. But the fact that it was thrown that hard and that high meant that if Funchess even put his hand on it, that made it easy to intercept. That's where it, you know, that's where the driver became the sand wedge there, is because it put air underneath it that Maxwell was able to scoop it up for an interception. And I think that the truth is always somewhere in between, right? Could the Panthers surround Cam with better playmakers as wide receivers? Yes. And is some responsibility on Cam to perhaps be a passer and not a thrower sometimes, as the great Joe Namath once said about Chad Pennington? he's a passer, not a thrower.
I don't think it's too big of a deal. I mean, you look at another quarterback that has a similar issue, was Ryan Mallett. He was just rifling balls at his receiver's knees pretty much. He was throwing it low, and he's throwing it,
by the way,
90 miles an hour. So, I mean, if Cam...
You're comparing Cam Newton to a guy who can't make it to his team playing on time.
I understand that, but that's what I'm saying. Cam's doing it effectively, I mean, every once in a while. But if you're going to be thrown into cover and stuff, you'd rather throw it hard and not let the DB be able to pick it, because if a receiver probably can't handle the fastball, why would a DB be able to?
Well, that's the problem, is that these things glance off of hands and go straight up into the air. Like, those bullets that Cam's throwing, defensive backs can't outright catch it, but when it goes off of Ted Ginn's hand or it goes off of Devin Funchess's hand, then suddenly it goes 10 feet up in the air and slows down significantly and becomes very catchable. So, yeah, William, I think that is an area where Cam could improve. 843-652-3776. Sam is up next on Sound Off. What do you got for us, man?
Hey, I think you know kind of where I rest at in this topic.
Hey, every once in a while we need a hype man. What do you got, Sam?
Hey, look, the guys are playing gritty football. The things that I do like, I like that Cam's making good reads. Usually whenever he does throw the pick is when he is rushed and he's moving to his right. For whatever reason, especially when he tries to go that sideline, half sidearm sideline throw. He got caught on that last week and again this week. But what I do like is the guy threw three picks, the most interceptions he's thrown all year, and he still had the wherewithal to come back, put a good drive together, and take the stand and score a touchdown just like last week. We had a couple of interceptions. He didn't get down. The team didn't get down. Everybody's responding positive on this team. I think that's going to go a long way when we go and start grinding towards the end of the season when we get Green Bay, Atlanta. Some of the teams are going to put up, 28 points on us. So I like the aspect of that. I think that's one way he's definitely grown. I like the fact that our running game looked awesome. Ted Ginn was in there. I thought he had the one bad play where I thought he should have been down at the 1 yard line, but we end up being an interception, which I don't think that should have been attributed to Cam. I think that should have been more of a fumble. But
That was just like the Keekly PI call where there was like eight different calls mixed up in one. And, he made a football move with it, so shouldn't it have been a fumble, but somehow it was interception. It was a mess, but Ginn should have had that ball for sure.
I agree, but again, they went right back to Ginn on a couple of the plays, and he showed positive feedback. He ran the ball really well when it got in his hands. He made a couple of good catches in the slot, which I think is definitely his bread and butter. And we keep working that little slant over from the left side on Ginn, and he's going to break it for a couple touchdowns. He just has the speed. If he misses one tackle, then he's gone. So I definitely like where we're going at. I like the speed of our offense right now. We look really good whenever we're running the no huddle. I think Cam is coming into his own when he's barking orders out on the line as opposed to going to the huddle. I like the way that looks. And I just wish, I harp on this every week. I think next week's going to be the week. I just wish that we were getting a little more hype or a little more coverage on being as good as we are. At least talk about it some, other than, oh yeah, that's the team Greg Hardy used to play for. And it seems like that's kind of the coverage we're getting right now. Not, oh, look at the Panthers, they're doing really well. Even last night, Chris Collinsworth and Al, they were talking more about, you know, Denver and Green Bay being undefeated playing next week more than they were the Panthers the way they were playing last night. So, you know, maybe next week will be the week when we go 7-0 and maybe we'll get some recognition. But it's a great feeling to be a Panther fan. You guys have a good day.
Absolutely. A couple of points I want to touch on, Sam. Yeah, part of it is the Carolina Panthers being in a small market, and part of it is in this fantasy football first world, they don't have players that are scoring you points, right? So they're really excellent players, with the exception of Cam Newton and Greg Olsen, are not getting you fantasy points. And so I think that there are a lot of people that aren't hyping them up because the, you know, they're not Le'Veon Bell, right? They're not Antonio Brown. They're guys on the other side of the football like Luke Kuechly and Kawan Short and Josh Norman. I think there is something to that, that we teams that are better at offense, an elite offense with an above-average defense gets more hype than an above-average offense with an elite defense. I think that there's no question in both levels of football right now, college and professional, that's true. A number of excellent points that Sam touched on with the Panthers as a whole, and not to just say, hey, they're Greg Hardy's former team, but like, we really need to get into this Greg Hardy topic. Jason Garrett's thoughts on Greg Hardy's confrontation with Dez Bryant and their special teams coordinator Jerry Jones' thoughts, and Greg Hardy's thoughts himself. Where does that line need to be drawn where you say, okay, just because you're an elite talent doesn't make up for the BS that you're giving us right now? And has he officially crossed it with the Cowboys? What do you guys think? That's coming up next on Sound Off. Back on Sound Off, Sports Radio 100.3, The Team. I'm Lewis Woodard. Following up on Sam's call and how Cam, despite throwing three interceptions yesterday, continued to go out there and play good football and not pout on the sidelines as he may have done in his rookie or second season with the Carolina Panthers, I think there is something to that. He was happy in the postgame interviews that his team was undefeated. He did not care that he was picked off three times, and I think that showed a lot of poise and some personal growth. And teams that figure out how to win, there is a commonality between those teams that figure out how to win. Those teams shake off mistakes earlier in the game. And Sam noted that Cam Newton went right back to Ted Ginn after he screwed up and led to an interception in the first quarter that basically could have finished the Eagles. Cam continued to go back to him, and that's what really good, strong-willed football players do. And the Chanticleers did that against Monmouth. That was a game, by all accounts, they should have lost. Monmouth outgained Coastal Carolina by 100 yards. Monmouth's field goal kicker missed one chip shot, a 39-yarder in the second quarter, and they didn't use the kid again. So they went for it on fourth downs, and they outgained Coastal Carolina by 100 yards. And there was a play where Tyrell Blanks in the fourth quarter dropped an easy pass from Alex Ross, and Alex Ross went back to him on the next series, and he had a big-time reception that set up a game-winning field goal. So that's what good teams do. They shake off mistakes and show maturity, keep going back to guys despite some earlier shortcomings. So I just wanted to draw that parallel between Cam and Alex Ross both having faith, and receivers who had screwed up earlier in the ball game. That's a big reason why both of those teams came out with wins that were all but certain in the fourth quarter. 843-652-3776. Before I swear, I will finally get to my thoughts on Greg Hardy. Here is Eddie. Eddie's weighing in on a little college football. Eddie, what's up?
What's going on, Lewis?
Eddie, you guys got a coach fired. You put a man out on the street. You made somebody unemployed.
Boo-hoo.
They're good, man. They're good.
You like that?
Yeah, Kirk Cousins apparently liked the 58-0 win over Miami.
Yeah, I loved it. I wouldn't have expected that. 2 weeks in a row, 2 weeks ago, almost 500 yards passing. Last weekend, almost 500 yards running. The offensive line was supposed to be the question mark on this team. Not anymore.
Yeah.
Not anymore. That left tackle, true freshman. Remember that, people. True freshman at starting left tackle. The man who protects and blocks against the best defensive lineman every week.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that's incredible. Number two, Coastal Carolina University. Couldn't be prouder of my alma mater. But they got to play a lot better to get by Charleston Southern next Saturday.
They have real problems, Eddie. Right now, I'm probably picking Charleston Southern They cannot stop the run. Coastal gave up 277 yards rushing to Monmouth.
I know.
After giving up a 195 to Presby, they cannot stop the run. Quinn Backus graduating hurt way more than anybody could have anticipated.
Yep. And that scares me. But on the positive side, we're still 7-0.
Yeah.
Still going forward. Clemson 7-0. Been a long time since we've had two schools in the state of South Carolina undefeated this deep in a football season. So I'm just excited about the state of football in South Carolina.
Yeah, a lot to like, for sure. A lot to like, Eddie. And appreciate the call, man. Eddie mentions Clemson throwing for over 400 yards, I believe, last time out, and they ran for over 400 against Miami. The only two teams in a given season that have, or the most recent team to, in the same season, run for 400 and throw for 400-plus in the same season, West Virginia in 2012. So Clemson just did something that hasn't happened in 3 years in football. Shows some unreal balance there. But yes, following up, Greg Hardy, Rich Bisaccia is the guy's name. He does want to be the head coach at South Carolina, the Cowboys special teams coordinator. If it were just him getting in a sideline shoving match with Dez Bryant, I could understand. As Jerry Jones says, he's got patience. I could understand that. But the fact that you're standing by a guy and saying that he's a leader and he walks the walk, those are all direct quotes from Jerry Jones, is disturbing, because I believe it really crosses a line when you put hands on a coach. Like, who has really put hands on a coach and gotten away with it? Like Latrell Sprewell and Carlissimo, was that the guy's name? Yeah, it's a really bad look. I can't remember a player putting hands on a coach and not even getting suspended, not getting fined, not getting a lesson. Like, I would maybe think that Jones and Garrett right now would be saying he's a passionate guy and it got out of hand, but it's unacceptable. They're just saying he's a passionate guy and he just wants the Cowboys to win.
We were talking about this before the show. I wonder what they'd be singing the same tune if he put hands on Dez Bryant and hurt him.
Well, he didn't hurt him, and that's where the difference lies. But, Hardy had two sacks against the Patriots. He had another one last night. He's played two games. He's recorded three sacks. He is still one of the top five pass rushers in the entire NFL. And if he were not an A-plus pass rusher, he would already be gone. But people will always make big-time allowances for talent, and Greg Hardy is still a dumpster fire. He doesn't care because he got a $13 million paid vacation last year. He learned no lesson. And what's going to happen next? Like, this story with Greg Hardy is not going to end well. Like, Roger Goodell is sitting back there looking at a clipboard, like, how can I keep this guy out of football for a while? Because they don't want the perception of the NFL to be guys like that. I just want to know, like, when is that final straw going to be? He's going to do something. Like, that is a prediction I am making right now. He is going to do something to get kicked out of the league for a while. There's been no discipline. I mean, he still got paid $13 million last year, even though he wasn't allowed to play. Cowboys not going to suspend him for hitting a coach. Anyways, that's a bad, bad look. And as Terry mentioned earlier in the show, that's addition by subtraction, man. You take him out of the locker room, that makes the Panthers better. I mean, yeah, did he absolutely terrify opposing offensive lines? Sure, but there's no telling what that kind of thing can do behind the scenes. All right, difficult call, but we're gonna select call today. That's coming up next. Welcome back to Sound Off, Sports Radio 100.3, The Team. Panthers undefeated. Coastal Carolina undefeated. Clemson undefeated. Unfortunately for South Carolina, the Miami job is open. Everybody knew it was going to be open, but that's a crowded marketplace for college football coaches this upcoming offseason. Southern California, Maryland. I mean, there are a lot of Power 5 jobs open right now.
Real quick, back on Coastal. I mean, I love Coastal as much as the next guy, but we talked earlier in the year about preseason rankings. They would not have this number one ranking if they started the season unranked, if there was no rankings before the season started.
Yeah, they are getting the Ohio State treatment.
Yeah.
Ohio State put up a 49-7 on Rutgers. I think they're starting to look legit with Barrett under center. But there were some games where Ohio State struggled, and there's the rule in the polls that if you're number one and you play well, that you're going to stay number one. And Coastal Carolina, I don't care how much you quote to me about FBS teams played, you cannot convince me that Presbyterian and Monmouth are legit. You can't convince me. You can convince me that, hey, maybe they're better than 1-5 and 3-4, which were their records when Coastal played them, but you can't convince me that they're actually legit good teams. And they shouldn't be running the ball 195 and 277 the last 2 weeks on Coastal Carolina. They have legit problems. We'll see what Coach Joe Mauglia has to say about that in the Joe Mauglia radio show right here on the station in just 2 minutes' time. Don't have time to go through a full clip of Call of the Day, but got to salute Big Paulie winning Call of the Day today for asking when the last time a white quarterback was compared to Heath Shuler. I thought that was, he said Ryan Leaf and Heath Shuler. I thought that was hilarious with Cam Newton was compared to Jamarcus Russell in the draft process. I think that's a valid point. Susan tweets at 1003 the team. I think the Dallas Cowboys know Hardy is straight up crazy and are just scared he'll beat the crap out of all of them. Yeah. Yeah, who's going to tell Greg Hardy he's cleaning out his locker? Like, you and what army?
He makes some poor intern do it.
He is like, of all of the college and professional athletes that I've been around, he is the most imposing, the one I'm most afraid of. Like, not even close. I don't even know who the second scariest person I've attempted to, you know, talk to in person. I don't even know who's second place. It's definitely Greg Hardy. But congratulations, by the way, to D'Angelo Henderson. And I know there's going to be more of it coming up in the Joe Mauglia radio show. He breaks the national FCS record for a touchdown in 21 straight games. And he is undersized if you haven't seen Coastal play. Now, they list him at 205, so that's not tiny for running back, but he's a short guy. He's like 5'9", 5'10". He is definitely more of the Sproles mold than he is Eddie Lacy, for sure. And you wouldn't imagine that he would be excellent on the goal line, but he got another goal line score against Monmouth. And that's unreal consistency, shows his ability to score in a variety of ways. And even though he has the highlight reel cutbacks, he can still find the hole and run strong when he needs to on the goal line, as he did against Monmouth. So a terrific achievement, and I just wish that it were in a prettier overall performance for the Chanticleers. But hey, win's a win. Stay right here for the Mauglia Show.